All right, we welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases set for our December 8th, 2015 docket in the interest of HL and SL. Cause number 214388 CV is our first case. You'll be arguing in front of our panel. To my right is Justice Bill Meyer, and to my left is Justice Lee Gabriel, and I'm Justice Terry Livingston. I understand all of you have checked in and stated your time to our clerk. So we have Laura Hayes arguing for the appellant and Mr. Pickering arguing for the appellee. All right. If you already are ready to proceed, we shall do so. Thank you.
Please, the court, counsel. It's an honor to appear before the court today. This is my first appellant argument. My name's Laura Hayes, and I'm here today representing the mother, pro bono, who's been fighting for custody of her children for almost 3 years, following the death of their father in March of 2013. She is present in the courtroom today. The appellee is the paternal uncle who sought managing conservatorship after the children's father had died, and just prior to his death was when the paternal uncle had started possession of the children. Prior to that, he had very little interaction with these children. While my brief talks about six different issues presented to the court, I wanted to focus today on two of the biggest issues, which are standing and then whether or not there was evidence of significant impairment to the children's safety and welfare at the time of filing the suit or even throughout the proceedings, which would mean that the appointment of mom would be significantly impair the children's health, safety and welfare. There's clearly a constitutional right for a parent to raise her child, and in this case, the paternal uncle relies on three major issues in support of his arguments that he should be managing conservator, and those are mom's drug use, some issues regarding the probate proceedings for the father, and the alleged inability of the paternal uncle and the mother to co-parent. In order for the paternal uncle to get managing conservatorship over the mother, he had to, first of all, have standing and show that the present circumstances of the children would significantly impair their health or emotional safety. It's our argument that he didn't even meet the initial standing requirements. But even if this court finds that he did meet the initial standing requirements, he would still have to show that appointing the mother managing conservator over sole managing conservator would impair their safety and welfare and would be in their best interest. And it's our argument that he fails to do that because there's quite simply no evidence that rises to the level of meeting that burden by a preponderance of the evidence that having the children placed with their mother would significantly impair their safety and welfare. At the time the case was filed, the children were 12 and 10. They're now 15 and 12. As I mentioned previously, one of the major issues that paternal uncle relies on is mom's drug use. There's no question she had a history of drug use in her past. But at all times during the course of these proceedings and for at least 3 months prior to the initiation of these proceedings, mom was drug free. And the time she had the kids after their father's death and until the temporary orders hearing, she was drug free. These kids were not around mother's drug use related to these proceedings. In the past, that was in the past. But paternal uncle is basing these harms on her drug use, which just wasn't present at the time of filing. As part of the temporary orders hearing in April of 2013, there was a hair test and a drug test conducted on the mother. The hair test came back negative. She was drug free. And at the trial, there was expert testimony.
The fingernail test came back.
Correct.
Showing drugs. At what point do you, you say 3 months before this, okay, what is the cutoff? I mean, is 3 months enough of a history to say that there's not a serious question?
Well, I think that the fact that their mother wasn't on drug, the hair test came back negative, and she had a CPS drug test swab about a month later. And the issue with the 3 months, I think, in this case, is that the paternal uncle, who's seeking managing conservatorship over mom, didn't have very much interaction with these kids until just before dad died. So it was just in the beginning of 2013 when he came into their lives, and mom was drug-free at that time, and paternal uncle, there wasn't any drug issues, so where's the imminent harm to those kids at the time the case was filed? Mom has a drug history. Sure she does, but there's lots of case law out there showing that a history of drug use doesn't rise to the level of showing a significant impairment to these kids.
There's lots of case law also that says that a recent turnaround isn't enough to get to at least not give him standing.
Right, I understand that. And so that's why our argument, too, is that even if there is the court finds that there was standing, there's still not enough evidence to show that there was significant impairment to these kids. The expert testimony didn't show any specific identifiable behavior by mom that harmed these kids. There's no physical abuse. There's no psychological issues. There wasn't any allegation that mom couldn't provide a roof for these kids. Sure, there was some evidence that maybe paternal uncle could provide more financially to these kids, but that's not, again, rising to the level of significant impairment to the children at the time the case was filed, or even throughout the course of proceedings. There was no behavior by mom showing harming these kids in any way, and there wasn't any evidence that the kids had been emotionally harmed by being in their mother's custody. She had sole custody. She had filed a writ of habeas corpus following the father's death to get custody back from the paternal uncle, and she had sole custody of those kids from the time the habeas corpus was granted until the temporary orders hearing, and there was no evidence during that time that was presented to the court that she had it was between a month and 6 weeks. And so there was no evidence that there was any harm to those kids during that time. She was able to care for them. She got them to school. I mean, there just wasn't any issues that during that time period she was solely responsible for them, that they were harmed in any way. And I think it's important also to note that during the entire course of these proceedings, mom has another child who's younger than the children subject to this suit, who she had primary custody of throughout the entire time. CPS got involved because the paternal uncle called with that child, and CPS found that they ruled out any neglectful supervision of that child. So if there's no harm to a younger child who's in mom's custody at the time the case was filed and throughout the entire course of the proceedings, where's the specific act by mom showing harm to the two kids that are subject to this suit? So I think that's really important for this court to note. And one of the things that the paternal uncle has to prove is that the present circumstances, you know, were harmful to the child. Mom, they had been living with her, as I mentioned, prior to the hearing between the habeas corpus and the temporary orders hearing. She had her own apartment. Her other minor children resided there. The kids go to school on time. There were no issues with the kids' school, you know, when they were in mom's care or even throughout the course of the proceedings. Both kids who were interviewed as part of the social study and were interviewed by the judge expressed happiness to see mom. They wanted to spend more time with mom. They talked about how much fun they had with mom. And at no time, even though the court repeatedly asked them if there was anything else they need to know, did they indicate there was any harm to them or anything that the court should be concerned about with those children being around their mother. In fact, the only incident that was specifically related to the children was when the oldest of the two was caught with drugs at school, but that was during a time when the paternal uncle had primary custody of the kids. So the significant impairment, there just isn't enough facts and to show that placing these kids with their mother as managing conservator would harm them physically. There was absolutely no evidence and no allegation of any physical harm to these children at any point. So then it goes to their emotional safety and well-being, but there wasn't any evidence presented. There was a psychological test conducted related to the mother. She wasn't diagnosed with any mental health issues. The children weren't psychologically evaluated, so there's no evidence that they have any psychological harm or psychological effects from being with their mother. So the case law has a really high burden on third parties seeking standing over the biological parents. In this case, we only have one biological parent, but there's just no specific identifiable facts that meet the required burden to show that these children would be harmed with their mother. In fact, the doctor who conducted the psychological test discussed her concern for the emotional harm for these children being separated from their mother and their younger sister. Another issue before the court is that mom was denied certain parental rights and duties. Under the current order, she's not even allowed to access educational, psychological, or medical records for her kids, so she can't even keep track of that. I think that's clear abuse of discretion. She's also not allowed to consult with any of the educational or medical providers for these kids. She can't even keep track of how her kids are doing. Maybe there is emotional harm now, but she can't figure that out because she's not even allowed to access the records or consult with the third-party providers, medical, educational, psychological, for these kids. One of the cases that I cited in my brief was a memorandum appendum from this court, which goes into a lot of detail about the cases that are out there for third-party standing. And it's the Henry KRB case from 2010. And in that case, mom was actually using drugs. She got caught for methamphetamines at the time the case was filed and still didn't rise to the level of meeting third-party standing over the mom being appointed managing conservator. So in this case, we don't have any present use of drugs. We have a history. We don't have any present use of drugs. We don't have it. I mean, mom's financially stable. Mom's got custody of her other child. I don't think that there was enough evidence to show that placing these kids with their mom would cause harm or had caused harm in the past.
You made reference to the psychological that was done, but in fact a different psychologist was originally appointed who refused to do the psychological because of that person's opinion that mom, as you call her, couldn't tell the truth.
Yes,
that correct?
Right, but then when the actual psychological test was done, there wasn't anything that came up showing that mom had any mental health issues. There was no official diagnosis. The psychological tester did not conduct any evaluations on the kids. So they're just, I mean, she had speculation that the kids could be harmed, maybe, but she also noted that the emotional separation of the kids, or the emotional impact of the kids being separated from their mom, could also be an issue. So there was no specific finding.
When you say emotional impact of being separated from their mom, other than that month to 6 week period, when was the last time the children had actually been under the managing conservatorship of their mother?
Prior to the case being filed? Or?
Prior to the case being filed.
She was the possessory conservator after the divorce between the mother and the father, and then they reconciled for a short period of time, and she was living with the biological the parents were living together for a period of time, so I guess they had joint, although legally the father was the primary parent. They were together raising those children for a brief period of time even after the divorce, and then mom was kind of in and out for a little while, but that's where the history of the drug use comes in. She did have some issues, but then she cleaned up her act after that and came back to the kids.
She was incarcerated during that period of time?
Correct,
well?
Yes. The case law, I think one of the focuses is mom's drug use, obviously, from the paternal uncle and then from you guys, but I think it's really important to note that at no time during these proceedings was she using drugs, and there's a lot significant case law out there where the parents are using drugs during the course of proceedings and they still get managing conservatorship over their kids as opposed to a third party having that. And I just think that the facts of this case don't rise to the level that's required for the paternal uncle to have managing conservatorship over the mother. If y'all don't have any other questions, I think that's it.
I guess I have one. If he doesn't have standing, which I guess is your primary or first argument, but if he doesn't actually have standing, then the case needs to be dismissed. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So he wouldn't even have standing to ask to be appointed possessory conservator?
I mean, well, he didn't ask for that. He only asked for managing conservatorship. So their argument there for standing is that he would have to show the significant impairment at the time of filing. So as far as whether he had, I mean, he could file for possessory conservatorship, and, you know, that's a different issue, I think. But the issue is whether he had standing to file for managing conservatorship.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Mr. Pickering.
Pleasure to be here this morning. Last time I did an appeal was out in Eastland 20 years ago. I basically am a trial attorney in family law. I still do some personal injury. I stay on the bond list to bail the kids of my previous clients out of jail when they have a run-in. This case took me 22 months to get accomplished. It started out in 2006 when the deceased father and the mother were divorced. She had a drug problem at the time. He was appointed sole managing conservatorship. Her activities with drugs and appearing unexpectedly at his residence ended up with protective orders being filed and granted against her. In the social study, she openly admitted both to Dr. Wiggins, the psychologist, and to Susan Goldstein, the social worker, that she violated that temporary, those protective orders numerous times. She admitted that she was a convicted felon. She was convicted of possession of drugs with intent to deliver, and she was convicted of forgery. When this case started, the father was suffering from liver failure. He had already had a liver transplant. And in the course of that first transplant, he received tainted blood which resulted in hepatitis C. He was dying. He was on the list for a second transplant. He lived in West Fort Worth, out by on the other side of 820. He had a very nice residence. Eventually, it sold for some $359,000 or $60,000 in the probate court. The mother has a long history of drug use, and during that entire history, I believe the record reflected that she never went through any kind of rehab. When the father died, the brother and his family buried him. The mother did not go to the funeral. She did not pay for the expenses. The children and the father had been living with the uncle, his brother, out in Parker County. And prior to that time, the youngest child, who is not the subject of this suit but is a half-sibling to these two teenage kids, had been removed from the household of the biological father and the mother because of their drug use. CPS had intervened and taken the children in 2011. At that point, the mother requested that the deceased father intervene and ask for possession, and with the consent of the biological father and the mother, he intervened into their lawsuit. I represented him in that, and Judge Berger granted possession of the 4-year-old to my client. The mother and the father had visitation, and that was after they had gone through stair-step visitations, I recall, and frequent drug screening. Counsel may be unaware, but in the time leading up to the father's death, the mother had started back into drugs again. She had relapsed. Before she actually gained possession of the children by an emergency protective order after the father died, she had confronted the uncle, his sister, and cousin at the father's residence in West Fort Worth while they were attempting to get the residence in shape to sell in the estate. The children were the primary beneficiaries of the estate. He left nothing to the mother. He denied that he ever reconciled with her. Even in the social study, the two adult daughters testified that once their mom and dad got divorced, she was basically out of their lives, periodically would show up. The housekeeper, who I had testified at the trial, who was also the renter on the property, because the property is a very nice piece of property, had large bedrooms, had a rental apartment that was connected to the to the driveway at the end, had a three-car garage, had a swimming pool, very nice place. She lived on the property with her husband. Her husband did the yard work. She cleaned up the house. She testified that the mother did not live with the father, that the only people that lived in the house were the two daughters that are the subject of this suit and the four-year-old, and that periodically the adult daughters would move in and out of the residence with their boyfriends. When he became extremely ill, he moved out to Parker County. He took the girls with him. The uncle was not equipped to take all of them, including the four-year-old. The four-year-old went to live not with the mother. She went to live with the cousin who lived five houses down from the deceased father's residence in West Fort Worth. She stayed there until after the funeral. The four-year-old did. The mother didn't go see her, didn't come by. And at that point, the sisters took possession of the four-year-old after the funeral and apparently at some point in time turned the child back over to their mother. When we went to the temporary hearing, there was more than just the drug thing. First of all, this woman denied that she had been on drugs recently at all. She said, "I haven't used drugs for years," 2006. Well, by the daughter's, adult daughter's later testimony or statements to the social worker, she'd been on drugs for years. In fact, one of the older daughters said, "That's where I used to get my drugs. I would go in and steal my mother's drugs that she was using." Bad atmosphere, bad environment. The father, once he passed away, and once the funeral was done, and once the bills were paid for the funeral, and once the children were enrolled out there in school in Parker County, mom goes down to the district court, family court, fills out a fill-in-the-blank emergency protective order. In that protective order, she alleges, as the basis of that protective order, that the uncle, his sister, the aunt, and the cousin prevented her from entering her residence, which she alleged was the ex-husband's residence out in West Fort Worth. She got the protective order, took the constables out there, had the uncle, the aunt, and the cousin all removed from the property by the constable with the protective order. According to the housekeeper and the renter, it was within a few minutes a moving van pulled up and unloaded all of her personal property and furniture into the house. She claimed in the probate court that she was married, that she was still the wife, that I had somehow procured a divorce for the deceased husband by fraud, that I had fraudulently prepared a will. I didn't even prepare the will that was admitted to probate. I had nothing to do with it. She submitted a will in contest. Judge Furchill, Judge Morissette did not find it well taken at all. The first form she submitted had no signature, but had two witnesses affirming that this testator had signed this will in their presence. A week later, according to the clerk, the signature page shows up. It was dated different from what the witnesses' dates were. The probate court found that invalid, not a valid will at all. And I remind the court that this woman was convicted of forgery. So I was curious about whether or not she had put together the will. The will appeared to be both basically in her handwriting. Be that as it may, she wanted the property. What she did as soon as she got into the house, she went out to the school, took the protective order, went out there, picked up the two girls from school in Parker County, and brought them back to Fort Worth. Leading up to the dates of the first temporary hearing in front of Judge Munford, she confronted my client a couple of times with his sister and cousin. Those confrontations are related in the record. They testified she was wild-eyed. She appeared to be on drugs. She had the demeanor of somebody who was actively taking drugs at the time. We went to the temporary hearing, and Judge Munford immediately said, "Okay, guys," she was represented by counsel. He said, "Okay, now let's get a clear understanding." He said, "I don't care about the pleadings. Clear understanding is Mr. Pickering's got the burden to show that if his client's going to have possession of these children, it would be detrimental to him physically or emotionally. Now, we put on our evidence. They testified about her behavior. They testified about her lying to the court about not being on drugs, that she'd been using drugs for a long time. She then, at the writ of habeas corpus hearing, which Judge Munford allowed her to take possession of the children because we didn't have a suit on file yet. I had asked the judge to order her for a drug screen, and he did. And between that time, got the drug screen back. She had these other contacts with my client, and he was thoroughly convinced that she was back doing drugs all the time. Now, when the drugs, and in that testimony, temporary hearing, she testified she didn't use drugs, and then when the screen came back, because we had a break between the time of the testimony and the time we had to reconvene for additional time, we came back, the drug screen came back. And as Judge Gabriel indicated, positive on nails, didn't show anything on the hair. Counsel wants to say that her drug history was all in the past and she was doing great. That is simply not what the evidence showed. This woman has had drugs in her life since well before 2006, continued all the way up through up to the time of this case. As a result, Judge Munford, if you look at that associate court's recommendation, specifically made a finding that it was detrimental for the mother to have these children, that it would impair their physical or emotional development. He wrote that out right on the front of that recommendation. Her attorney appealed. We went had the rehearing on the in front of Judge Berger. Judge Berger heard the evidence again and reaffirmed the decision in toto. We then continued the case over and I was fighting both cases, the one in probate court and the one over here in family court. This woman definitely has a problem with reality and the ability to tell the truth. As it was noted by the court, the first psychologist, Dr. Norman, after contacting her and having conversations with her, he came to the quick conclusion that this woman can't tell you the truth. She lied about things about him and sent the letter to Judge Berger saying he wouldn't take the case. We looked around for another psychologist. I had never had Dr. Wiggins testify. She made an excellent witness. She gave her background. She went through what she did with the client. She did the testing. She said that this woman has a personality disorder, that she has a definite problem with telling the truth, and that she is so convinced about what she tells you that she believes it. Read her statement. Read her study that she did on the mother in this case. She eventually fired her attorney over in probate court and family court and decided she was going to do this pro se. We had, at last count, at least 19 motions that she filed. She would file them. We'd have a hearing in Judge Munford's court. She learned very quickly, I can appeal him, and we have another hearing, same thing over again in Judge Berger's court. We did that all the way up to the time of trial. This case has been an extreme financial drain on my client, the uncle. He is retired, Lockheed employee, does very well. On the standing issue, the jury had the, if you look at the instruction, Judge Berger prefaced, if you're going to appoint this uncle, he's got to meet this standard. You must find for the mother or whatever if you don't find that placing the children would not be detrimental to the children's physical or emotional development. Unanimous verdict in 39 minutes. So we've got two judges, actually four if you count probate court, two judges and 12 jurors saying it's bad for these kids to be with her. One of the things, if this woman is so interested in these children, read the social study. Goldstein said in her social study that the mother contacted the biological mother of the oldest child who was adopted by these folks, and after 13 years introduces the biological mother to the daughter, the oldest child in this suit. What do you think the emotional trauma would be to that child to find out that all of her family was not really her family biologically? I think it'd be devastating. She then, not only did she do that, read Goldstein's report, she told the biological mother, get yourself an attorney, see if you can reverse this adoption, and the child can go live with you. What kind of mother is that? What kind of mother is that? Certainly not the kind that doesn't represent an emotional trauma to the child that would affect her development. Now, if you look at the court's order, she followed the jury's decision. She then heard testimony on the child support and on the visitation. Under the family code, as this court well knows, the court can limit the duties, obligations of a possessory conservator if the judge finds best interest of the children, and she did. Likewise, in the testimony with regard to the visitation, the mother agreed. The only thing she didn't get on standard visitation was the full 30 days in the summer. After hearing from my client that the kids were in church school, they were doing very well, they liked activities in the summer, the mother agreed to take her 30 days and split it into two 2 weeks.
Mr. Pickering, your time is now up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for your arguments. Ms. Hayes, rebuttal.
I'll touch on the issue of the social study where the oldest child was informed that she was adopted. Mr. Pickering fails to note that it was the paternal uncle who first informed that child that she had been adopted. So he was the one that even opened that window for the mother to, or for the child to even know that she had been adopted and that her parent, or who she thought were her parents, were not her, in fact, her biological parent. With respect to the 19 motions, allegedly, or there were a bunch of motions filed by my client pro se, yeah, she was trying to do everything she could possibly do to get her children back. The paternal uncle, who had had almost no contact with these kids until just before the father's death, came in, took these kids, and wants to raise them. So yes, she was trying to do everything she could possibly think of to protect her children and get them back from the court. I think that the other issue that Mr. Pickering touched on was the probate proceedings, but I cited a case that from the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals where there were some allegedly fraudulent activity in that case that was the biological mother who was deceased by the father, and the court, again, still didn't find that the facts of that case rose to the level of appointing a third party managing conservator over the biological mom. So again, in this case, we don't have present history of drug use. We have CPS who became involved with a child who wasn't part of this case but was in mother's custody during the proceedings. They didn't find any issues with that child. So I'd like to point out to this court that there just is no specific identifiable harm to these kids that was presented. There's speculation that mom's history was an issue. Sure, mom had a bad history. There's no question about that. But following the divorce and the issues with the protective order, mom and dad reconciled. The protective order was eventually dismissed by agreement of the mother and the father. And this was before the youngest child was born. And the parents lived together and raised these kids off and on. And then the other child was born and, you know, there were some other issues. But for a period of time, even after the divorce, mother and father were involved with these kids. And now you have this paternal uncle who wasn't involved during the entire time these kids were being raised until approximately the beginning of January 2013, just before the father died. Mother's trying to raise these kids, wants to raise these kids, has been raising her younger daughter, who's not subject to the suit, but has the CPS found no issues with mom raising that child. There's no allegation that mom's home environment is an issue. In fact, their social study, they went to her house and there weren't any issues with mom's house. So she has the ability to raise these kids. There isn't a specific specific identifiable behavior other than mom's past history, which wasn't present during these proceedings or prior to these proceedings, that rise to the level of meeting the burden that paternal uncle has to show to get managing conservatorship over these kids. And the other issue is that the jury wasn't even given the option of appointing the paternal uncle and mother joint managing conservators. There was just the issue of sole managing conservator. So again, I think that was a problem before the trial court.
Did you raise that as an issue, have you?
I believe I mentioned it in my reply brief.
And it wasn't objected to at trial?
No, not, it was not.
I had one follow-up question, though. How far back during the trial did you go? Were you allowed to go regarding mother's past behavior?
They were allowed to talk about everything from the time of the divorce forward. There was my client did file a motion in limine seeking to exclude some of that, but the judge overruled that and they were allowed to go from the date of divorce.
Okay, so that's no longer an issue on appeal, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, counsel. We appreciate all of your briefing in preparation for today's submission. Your case is now submitted and you all are excused.
Thank you.
We'll call case number 2.